This is a wonderful honor. I'm just amazed, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart. I owe a great deal, obviously, to a number of people. Let me just pick out Dr. Hubbard as one. I heard him lecture many years ago and got to corresponding with him. And on April 8th of 1978, I was to speak at the Shoreham Hotel in Washington, D.C., to the national meeting of the National Association of Science Teachers, which is mainly secondary school and college teachers. And I called Dr. Hubbard and said, you know, I'm going to be there in your area. He was living in Bethesda. And I said, gee, I'd be very much honored if you'd come down and hear my talk. So I'm into the talk, and I see him over there. And at the end of the talk, I told the audience, I said, we're very honored today to have with us in the audience one of the principal founder of most of these ideas, Dr. Hubbard, and I asked him to stand to receive the applause of the audience. And we had lunch together afterwards, and we corresponded regularly. And my Bible in terms of looking up things about Dr. Hubbard is his 1972 report to a committee in the United States Senate. And it's marvelous. The mathematics is all there. It's just first-year college calculus. Of course, the inspiration behind it and the understanding is just magnificent. On October 26, 1995, I was giving my talk in a dining room in the basement of the U.S. Capitol building. There were three members of the House of Representatives there and about 40 staff people from the House and Senate. And one of the members of the House was Dr. Roscoe Bartlett. We're not related, as far as we can tell, but he's been very kind to me, and he's invited me down to speak in his district and to testify a couple of times in the House Senate House Committee that he chairs. And he has recently really taken up a crusade on trying to educate his colleagues in the Congress and the American public on the question of the Hubbard curve and the meaning of this. And I'm tremendously indebted to him for all of his work. And another person, I'm sorry, he can't be here today, is Walter Youngquist, who's a global resource geologist living in Eugene, Oregon. And he corresponds with me. We're back and forth on the phone and by letters just regularly. And he is very much aware of the problems of limiting resources, and I'm certainly greatly indebted to him for all of the information he gets to me. It's just amazing. He's a font of information. Perhaps you've seen his magnificent book, Geodestinies. What I'd like to do is to just comment on that first law that Steve mentioned. You cannot sustain population growth. And all of the energy people I talk to, the sustainability people I talk to, the environmental people I talk to, they're all working in their various areas, but nobody will come out and say, we've got to address the population problem, the population growth problem. U.S. population growing 3 million people a year. And we're seeing, you heard just a statement a few minutes ago, natural gas production in North America is either flat or perhaps past the peak. And so the problems are coming, and we have to address this. And I addressed it in an article that was in Physics Today, which is a journal that goes to all the professional physicists in the country. And I drew from Mark Twain, and I drew a story that he had about the silent lie. If you know something and you don't tell people about it, you're telling a silent lie. And what Mark Twain said is that this is the most timid and shabby of all lies. The silent assertion that nothing's going on, which fair and intelligent men and women are aware of and are engaged by their duty to try to stop. So it's great to be worried about the energy problem, but we've got to realize then that on the demand side, the growing population is the thing that drives all of these problems, and I hope we can address it. So I'm very much honored. I thank you for your kindness. I really appreciate it. Thank you.